This is a production of Cornell University.
Time is 4:46. The meeting will come to order. I'm taking the role because John's not here. Morgan, Colin, Armin, Uche, John, Osai, Jake Fight, Masa, Pat, Juliet, Aaron, Gavin, Nick, Liam, not here, Indigo, Moss, Lucas, Polina, Noah, Ryan,
absolutely.
CJ Youngblood, and Ron. Ron, I saw you come in. There we go. There are 21 members present. We'll move into announcements. Late announcement. That's what I thought I actually said. Yeah.
So I forgot, I'm not going to be here this week, so I wanted to put this out there. And I was trying to be here for me. Today, should be sort of excited to talk about the census, brief life.
If you want to send that out for our listeners, let them know. Osai.
Oh, yeah. So, since we didn't have our survey last Sunday, I will be making a presentation on the iClicker/encoding next week. So, or if it's happening this Sunday, whatever, whichever.
Thank you for your update. Any other announcements? Got Nick.
Hi, healthcare. Super important. We need more people coming to the chat meeting. So if you have 5 or 6, 3 or 6, it's not very interesting. Yeah. Yeah, send them over. Jacob and Glenn and I will be here. So, check them with us. But let's look at the word.
Thank you, Gavin. Hello. Thank you all. Research and accountability request for the committee to do work for you, to have the committee work for you, particularly essay conduct, community conduct, research into resolution, and also amendments to documents. Please use the link in the Slack and then
Uche. Hi. If you are a team member and you're on SAIC, I really need you to stay out of your way.
Thank you. Any other announcements? My name is Valentina, and the executive committee is doing an audit of who's been attending your committee meetings. All of you should have been attending at least one throughout the last semester. We're going to make sure that we've been looking around the committee chairs, so if you haven't been attending all of last semester that you're supposed to be attending, just talk to us after the meeting so we know not to look for you. It's involved. What else I? Thank you. Next we'll be moving into the group of minutes. At the same time, we'll be January 30th minutes. Please refer to section 2, subsection C, subsection 5. I would like to make that clear. Please eat it. No. Yes. Thank you. Mariah, thank you. No woman of the people, you're still working the F. anything on the minutes? Anything on the minutes? Sorry, I was just for the minutes, but yeah, that's how much for the second all in favor. Alina and Mariah, are you voting? Alina, are you voting? Thank you so much. All opposed. All abstaining by vote 21 to series 1. Minutes have been approved. We'll move to open the microphone.
I'm not moving to open the microphone. If you have any members of the community wish to speak, please come up to the middle. I wish. Okay, we're going to close the microphone.
Thanks for having a presentation from our Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion, Tom.
We're good? Okay, we got it.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi, everyone.
don't know who I am, so yeah. Basically, what I'm going to talk about today is similar to what I covered at the start of the year, which is the orientation. Some of you may have been at, some of you may have missed for our freshman reps and other positions that got elected in the fall. Basically, I'm just going to give a rundown of the relationship between Cornell University and the territory that Cornell occupies in historical context, as well as basically a breakdown of what Cornell being a landmark institution actually means. Because we hear that term thrown around a lot, but none of us really have a lot of context as like how Cornell came to be a landmark institution, or like the actual costs that went into it to make any sense. So first, I'm just going to basically start with, So first off, I just want to say that I'm not claiming to be an expert in the subject matter, I'm just a student, I'm not here on behalf of any academic body or anything like that. So this is just basically what I'm going to cover. This is a historical overview of going up to the nation and the Confederacy, and then introducing the historical context by which Cornell came into possession of the lands that occupies today. So basically, the reason why I'm bringing this up today is because in the next 2 to 3 weeks, probably there's going to be a land acknowledgement resolution that will be brought before the Confederacy State Assembly, as well as hopefully some other assemblies around campus. Basically, a land acknowledgement is a statement issued before any events that acknowledges the indigenous people who have traditionally occupied that territory since time immemorial and continue to occupy that territory today. It serves a number of purposes, from combating indigenous erasure to setting the groundwork for a better relationship between whoever does occupy that territory and the people. So, yeah. Intro to the 100 Story History. Basically, many of you probably heard of us referred to as the Iroquois Confederacy in the history books. We prefer the term Haudenosaunee, which means people from the Cornwalls, because we're super creative with our names. We were made up of the Cayuga Nation, Seneca, Navajo, Omega, Mohawk, and Tuscarora. Basically, we occupy most of the land, which is now New York State. So going back to the 12th century, just a little bit of history on how we came to call the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, and basically the longest democracy on the longest, fifth standing democracy on this continent to date. Basically, there was a whole lot of infighting between nations of the Confederacy, between the Seneca and the Navajo and Mohawk. And the peacemaker came along sometime in the 12th century and spread what he called the Great Law of Peace. He basically went around with all the different nations and spread this message to us to stop fighting each other and kind of show the Confederacy situations. So the Tuscarora Nation was the Six Nations, so you can hear us refer to as the Six Nations. That's where they came from. Joined the Confederacy later in 1722. Basically, our laws and our constitution influenced a whole bunch of other constitutions today, more specifically in the context of U.S. history, the Articles of Confederation, which was drafted by Ben Franklin. Basically, came to New York before he wrote the Articles of Confederation, sat through a Great Law of Peace recital, which basically takes 3 days. To recite every single one of our laws orally in oral tradition, and was like, wow, that's really cool. We could adapt that in the American context, and that would work for us. As most of you know, the Articles of Confederation failed miserably because they just couldn't move. So, yeah. Specifically, focusing on the communication and the government system within there. Basically, the way that our society was set up is that we're a matrilineal society, which means your family is
your family line, i.e. your clan, was basically determined by your mother, so whatever clan your mother had was passed on to you. For example, my mom was Wolfa and we were clan, but I'm not looking at that. So anyways, if you ever had five clans, bear, hare, slave, turtle, and wolf, clans were determined by a citizen's mother. Within each of the clans, there is a clan mother who basically inherits that position, and it's up to the duty of the clan mothers to basically elect our tribal chiefs and our leaders to serve in their positions to the Greater Haudenosaunee Central Council of Fire. So, going back to basically how Cornell, or how the lands that Cornell occupies was cleared in the first place, how the population was displaced, is it basically all started with the Sullivan Clinton campaign in the Revolutionary War period, where basically Seneca and Onondaga had sided with the British against the Americans, and there were a series of raids carried out that basically stops all movement of supplies between New York and Pennsylvania, basically crippled most of the American Continental Army. So the response to this was Washington was like, wow, we're losing because of these guys. So he ordered over half of the Continental Army forces under command of General Sullivan Clinton to basically go on kind of a genocidal rampage against the Six Nations, because some of us had sided with the British. Despite their neutral status, the Cuban Nation was targeted by the US military. So the Clinton campaign in 1779. Basically, the genocide part of their campaign failed because the villages were empty before the military actually got there, because they were using the land as scouts against us, and the Americans were like, wow, that's really messed up that we're going to just go and spy on the Cuban Nation. So they let us go in advance, and we didn't get the hell out of there before anything really bad happened. But unfortunately, a lot of our infrastructure was destroyed and burnt to the ground. There were dozens of villages that were just completely torched, and the majority of loss of human life came after the war of starvation and exposure. So this is basically the one big event that displaced the Cuban Nation from the territory that we're occupying today. After they were displaced, after the Revolutionary War, the soldiers that served the Continental Army got to pick from parcels of land that were Cuban Nation territory, as well as some territory throughout New York State. After the Revolutionary War, there was the Treaty of Canandaigua in November 1794, where basically a lot of the chiefs of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy met with George Washington and other United States leaders and entered into this treaty that basically affirmed the sovereignty status of both the Haudenosaunee Confederacy and the United States. This was big for the United States because they were just kind of starting out as a country and looking to establish themselves as a legitimate world power. This was big for us too because it was supposed to refer to the return of a bunch of our land, and unfortunately didn't happen. So basically, the treaty said that the Cuban Nation had claimed 64,000 acres of territory that was north of the Finger Lakes. Unfortunately, it's not the Finger Lakes. Aftermath of this treaty and the Sullivan Clinton campaign for the next 250 years, the Cuban Nation was continuously pursue this land claim to no success. They basically been shot down at every court that they tried to advocate themselves on. So, in the beginning, in the early 2000s, they just started buying their land back. Because of that, they've since been able to gain a landmass for themselves. However, it's still technically under U.S. jurisdiction because it's not considered sovereign territory, so it's still liable to U.S. taxes and U.S. law.
So in the context of Cornell, my grad institution, what does that mean? So basically the term my grad institution comes from the four my grad texts, which were decided in 1862, which basically gave a lot of the fledgling states territory, basically gave them vouchers for lands that they were supposed to turn a profit from and use that to establish landlord institutions, i.e. institutions of higher education that were focused on agriculture and mechanic arts. So under the Act, we developed the state received 30,000 acres of federal lands, either within its boundaries or beyond its boundaries in the western states as well. So this land only received from its sale was to be used for establishing a single institution of higher education of the state's choosing. So after the Sullivan Clinic, then 990,000 acres of land was granted to New York State for the Oral Land Rights Act, and Cornell was selected as its land rights institution. However, because of the parcel that occurred post Revolutionary War period, there wasn't any territory left in New York State for Cornell to reclaim. So basically, what the Land Rights Act says is that if there isn't any more lands in the state, then they can put out of state. And basically, New York State and Cornell University were issued a script, which is similar to just like an IOU. 990,000 acres of territory that they can then select federal lands in other states. So, what they finally settled on was the northern Wisconsin, which were acquired by Timber and John Draw, who has a building back in on the Art Squad that I'm sure you all are familiar with. Basically, these forces were taken under duress from the Ojibwe and Ami people who actually occupied them. So what does this mean? It basically means that the Cuban nation wanted the indigenous peoples to suffer under the labor attack and not the university. So after they had selected the 190,000 acres in Wisconsin, Cornell basically sat on that investment for 1865 to 1920s, that's the 60 years, 50 years, until basically the selling price for the territory that they acquired through the Land Rights Act had gotten so lucrative that they were able to establish themselves as an academic powerhouse with a massive endowment. So yeah, New York only received 1/10 of the land rent by the 1920s. Cornell had sold most of its territory in Wisconsin, 1/3 of the total grant revenues. So in the context of Cornell today, despite this history, it tends to recognize the nation who occupied this land, the process that led Cornell's family to go into events. However, Cornell's recognition of the value of the people is slowly increasing. Last semester, there was a language course that was taught at Cornell, which was really awesome. Something that the American Indian Digital Studies Program has been fighting for a lot of years. It's being offered again this semester. We're hoping that this indicates the potential shift towards a positive relationship between Cornell University, New York State, and the Cuban nation in the future. So in the context of student assembly, as student leaders on campus who represent different graphics and bodies of students, we all have the responsibility to educate ourselves on the history behind the university, how it came into possession of the territory it occupies. So basically, you guys can give some thoughts on what it means to occupy this territory, take part in this role institution that we're all currently in. Before this land and boundary comes up. This land and boundary resolution comes up in 2 or 3 weeks. Just another disclaimer as the 89 I'm writing a resolution that anything to do with this is a group of parents, it's responsible to reach out to them, and it's all the most important respective protocol based off of how much your resolution impacts that system. Any questions? So I was sitting in acknowledgement just like the first step of letting and acknowledging this. Where do you go from there? Like say save passive, say put it on conscious. That's where do you go? Alright, sorry. So letting acknowledgement's obviously probably like the first step of letting. Like what would be like the next action steps after this? Like where do you pass it? So basically, after a letter conflict gets passed, there's so much more after this. Like, this is the most basic first step that any institution or person can take. And Cornell still hasn't done it. So after this, Cornell could, for example, support the communication of the nine claims that they filed in the state of New York. They could give the land back that they're not using to compute a nation. They could recognize the nation's sovereignty to the territory that is currently occupied in Ithaca. They could consult the communication on research that is currently conducted that affects the environment in the Ithaca area, the territory that Cornell occupies. They could consult the communication when it comes to stuff like the North Campus Expansion Projects and stuff like that. Basically, anything that has something to do with the territory university occupies, normally the best protocol to go about interacting with that territory in a respectful way would be to go to the right people and ask them for permission to go to the right. But obviously, the Cornell University does not want to do that without me acknowledging facts that these people have.
Has any university acknowledged it before? And if so, has it been a positive experience or for not being what the university is?
So there have been a bunch of line of conflicts in the past for universities. There are different relationships that especially universities that I really have with the territory that Dartmouth has a computer charter that they're supposed to basically attempt this reconciliatory process for indigenous peoples, and they're supposed to have basically the equivalent of affirmative action that X percentage of native students there per year, providing the certain resources, all this kind of stuff. When you look at Canadian institutions of higher education, it's kind of better because Canada really blessed with indigenous peoples more than the US did in a way. So they thought it's worse about it, which I don't know how you want to look at that. Basically, what Canada has adopted is an entire legislative process of what they call reconciliation with indigenous peoples that basically provides the tribes funding to send their students to the university or wherever. They have a whole planning process that's like basically set in stone so that our nations can process land claims in a more quicker and easier fashion than there is in the US because the US just tends to not get anything out of the government, especially under this administration. But yeah, even though Canada treats their students better, they still do a whole bunch of horrible stuff in other countries. I actually really resent from that. It's me, so Steve.
Can
you
go? So I wonder if this is a plan to pass through all five assemblies
So, I'm guessing that President Pollock will not be on board with this. And basically, it's a very complicated process to go through the past because you have to have a lot of collaboration from the background of people themselves as far as like how they want to be like talked about, basically, and like the dialogue that's used to recognize their inherent sovereignty, like to the territory, is basically up to them, otherwise that's not great. So I'm still working with Central Senate to the current resolution they plan to use the SA for really hammered down. But after that, I basically want to pass a secondary resolution that probably take a couple more months to work with the PPHA for the university to try to get Cornell to commit to taking a more proactive approach to developing an official relationship with the PPHA. So once, basically, I want to see how President Pollock responds to this past undergraduate assembly and then go through the rest of these things as well.
A little bit under the weather, so please don't mind that. First of all, I just want to say thank you. I always tell you how appreciative I am of the institution that they're pretty valuable in terms of understanding exactly where they are. But there are other parts of the school that are often not taught in school in public schools like I went to. And so my question to you is, you know, I think that you understanding of this, obviously. I'm sure we have built countless relationships regarding religious people studies. Have you ever considered, or is there any mandatory education requirement regarding the history of religious people? Whether it be in the New York or in the United States, that would require all criminal students to take, because I think it's generally necessary, not just the essay, but the entire criminal community understanding this. So we're going to have that essay.
Yeah, so basically, depending on which religious studies professor you ask here on campus, you kind of get a different answer as to their opinion about that. Basically, some of the professors I've spoken to have pushed for a mandatory, what they would like to see a mandatory religious studies course included in all Cornell University students like curriculum, because basically the mentality behind that is, I know that might not sound like the coolest thing for all of us on top of all our culture, but really when you get down to it, wherever you are on this continent, you're on some indigenous people's sovereign territory that has been stolen or they have been displaced from them by like a genocide or some similar process. It's very important that we as young students who are going out, we as young students who are going out into the world looking to make change, understand how to navigate these relationships with indigenous people, because we're everywhere. And anywhere you go, the US, Canada, or Mexico, you're on someone's sovereign territory as they take you from through some process. So it's in the works.
Good to hear.
Anyone else? Thank you again, Paul. Appreciate it.
To new business, from resolution one, we can look at this issue, represented by all positions, represented by large, and to the next. Thank you.
to deliver one. I probably said before you today, serving in my capacity as chair of the caucus. I'm joined by Olu, who is a founding member, he's chair of the caucus, and Mariah, who's the founding member. To wait, resolution number one, you need the women's seat to the women's seat.
This renaming is a very small step in making an assembly and canvas that is more inclusive and accessible to those who are trans, and transgender, non-binary, genderqueer, gender non-conforming, gender fluid, two-spirit, etc.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A change in the name of the seat, since we mentioned that there is a complexity to and of gender, the trans experience is understood through the movement, and to ultimately combat trans exclusionary feminism, trans misogyny, and transphobia. In addition, it comes to the Black trans women's experience in order to combat harmful exclusionary narratives that have largely been carried by cis women and cis white women who openly advocate for being a woman, as understood through these identities. Moreover, it is a reminder to all assembly members that we always have learning and learning to do. And we always try to be conscious of the things that we take up off of our rooms, and who does have the right power, not only to ensure that there is a seat at the table, but inclusivity, accessibility, diversity, and
equity. Lastly, in order to practice any questions and comments on the resolution, there are two important things to keep in mind. This dialogue will not include and will not describe us in questioning this. What is and is not one in the womanhood. Trans women are women, there need not be gatekeeping, there is no limit to success. Second, to reiterate language in the resolution, you are not voting on the caucus resolution. This has been voted on and passed. In addition to that, please keep in mind that the caucus is not a subsidiary on the board committee of the student assembly and is not a machine without resolutions if considered to the assembly leads. Thank you for your time.
Any questions, comments, anyone want to add something to us? Nick.
Love the mission. I have just a question about the X, like not quite a reference, but I was reading an article once that talked about how for the Latinx community, the X was not inclusionary. Is if you are just aware of that, like maybe like obviously gender is different. But actually, I mean, even though I am from Latinx, I'm going to give that question to Austin.
So I'm from Latinx, is not where Latinx is not inclusive in terms of for Spanish speakers, they would say Latinx. So sometimes people say Latinx, however, that's only within the context of learning Spanish. To like at the end. I think in this context when we're talking about the yes, is the most inclusive to our impact to work with right now. And I also go back to the resolution of saying this is a small step, this is not a stop, but we're working with what we have now, which really has the most we can be but yeah, I just don't think this
all the questions. Why was this chosen over women identifying? I just know that's another common phrase.
So I think for women identifying, it's often portrayed in the sense that I'm not read as a woman, instead you read me as X individual or as male or as man, instead of I am a woman.
Thank you. Here you go.
First of all the sources that you used here are amazing. So I just want to congratulate you guys for all the work you did with this. And I think that cis white feminism is a prevalent problem on this campus. And as a woman's rep, I just want to know this is a great first step to learn that.
Any other questions or comments? All right. It's a terrific and our team, so I'm not going to vote on at this meeting, so moving into this step, I'll allow us to do it.
Yes,
that's fine. All right, any more questions here? you up or anyone says anything else back?
No.
Okay. That's the second all in favor of table. You can say your name and all opposed. All standing. 22:02 Express Solutions and Take the Next Meeting. We'll be moving into executive session. So thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.